Sunday afternoon, I had another one of those where did it all go moments that seemed to be coming to me with increasing frequency these days. It was up in the auditorium with our ROPES, or Coming of Age program, for our junior high age young people. There's 23 of them enrolled in that program this year. And I'm a mentor for one of the young persons. Each person who's in the program picks someone to be a mentor with them. And so last Sunday afternoon, after the service and the coffee hour, we had a gathering up in the auditorium for the mentors and mentees, as it were. And I looked around the room, and I realized that at least two of those ROPES kids were ones I'd done a dedication naming ceremony for, just like the one we had for Catherine a little earlier today. Well, I'm not ready to say at this point just what the full and final length of my tenure will be here, but it probably is safe to say I'm not going to be involved in the ROPES program when Catherine is ready for it. I will easily settle for being alive and in good health at that point. And then just yesterday here, this is what these flowers are about on either side of the, on our speakers over here, Sarah Fogle, longtime member of this congregation. I believe she was about 6-7 years old when I got here. I officiated her wedding here yesterday with her family and friends. Very joyous, wonderful occasion, even though we were sort of on the tail end of a hurricane out there. We had a wonderful time here, and her mother, Catherine, wanted to leave the flowers here to grace our service today and to donate them and Sarah and her new husband, Luke's congratulations for their wedding. It was also last Sunday that our 23-year-old son was in the congregation after coming back to Nashville to get his engineering degree or engineering career underway after graduating college. He was a 4-year-old preschooler here in our religious education program once upon a time. And he still enjoys very much, still keeps in touch, cultivates the friendships, the relationships that he made when he was in the ROPES program. And then the About Your Sexuality program that came after that. It's now called Now Our Whole Lives. I think about all these things, and it does, as I say, tend to put me in a certain frame of mind. And part of that frame of mind, though, has to include telling myself that I really honestly do not feel that I have become any more knowledgeable or any kind of an expert in any way about the rearing of children just for having done it. I have to say, what I most feel is just plain, flat out lucky more than anything else. And then I look beyond my efforts and those of my wife, Michelle, and I am greatly pleased, as I've already been indicating, at how we provide the religious education of our children and young people here in our church. And the really heavy lifting for that one is done by Chris Parker, our director, our committee, teachers, all of those who make that program go. So I don't have a whole really in-depth knowledge about religious education. I don't feel I've got a real in-depth knowledge about what it takes to raise a child, but having limited knowledge of the subject has never helped me back all that much when it comes to holding forth on it from this pulpit, so why should this Sunday be any different? We've really had a very good, very full service already, so I'm aiming for a kind of a short follow-up homily for our child dedication this morning instead of the full-blown sermon. I figure that's probably good for all of us. When we were receiving the outreach collection this morning, you heard Jed playing a song from the long-running off-Broadway play, The Fantastics. It's a song that would come back to me during the years that Michelle and I were raising our son. Although when I went to put the title for the newsletter, it didn't come back to me as well as it should have. I thought the title was Plant a Turnip, only to find it's Plant a Radish. There's a reference to a turnip in the song, but that's not the title, but I figured it. Turnip radish, I'm not terribly fond of either one. These are some of the lines. I'm glad Jed played that a while ago, because I can't sing it. But plant a radish, get a radish, never any doubt. That's why I like vegetables. You know what you're about. They're dependable, they're befriendable. They're best pal a parent's ever known. While with children, it's bewildering. You don't know until the seed is grown just what you sow. The There's some other lines in there that goes, one that goes, with progeny, it's hodgepodgeny. And a line, you don't know what you've got until it's grown. A lot of truth in those lighthearted lyrics. Raising children isn't near as predictable an undertaking as growing a vegetable garden. Khalil Gibran, in his oft-quoted collections of meditations called The Prophet, makes the same point using a different metaphor, where he says that children are like arrows that are shot from a bow. We can very carefully tend to the bow and the arrow. We can use our strength and our will and our good intended efforts to pull back that bowstring and aim it as carefully as we think we can. But once you let it go, it just goes where it will. All you can do is just stand and watch the trajectory and hope it lands in a good place. So whether it's as a parent, a teacher, a religious educator, which is what anyone who teaches in our RE program is, or anyone who is involved in any way in the care and the nurture of a child, I assume that includes all of you here in one respect or another. I'd like to just use a few of the words that we've already heard today in our dedication and naming ceremony to offer a few brief reflections and thoughts on what I see as being involved in planting that garden and pulling that bow, knowing as we do that what eventually results will indeed be beyond our reach. And I'm looking beyond the basics, like providing food, clothing, shelter, education, and the like, knowing, as we do, that there are many parents in this community, and in this country, and around the world, who struggle mightily on a daily basis just to provide those rudimentary kinds of things for their children. Well, part of the charge that was given to the parents to Chip and Mary, called upon them to have their child become aware of the world as it is and as it ought to be. That's a pretty tall order. It doesn't just apply to a child's parents, as I've been implying. It's a much more widely shared responsibility than that. We want our children, in whatever ways we relate to them, whatever our relationship to them may be, we want our children to be aware of the world as a safe and trustworthy place, a place where they can feel at home and confident, self-affirming way. But we also want them to have their antenna out, because not everything out there is safe or trustworthy. And we know there will be a number of times when their self-confidence and their sense of self-worth will be greatly tested. We need to be ready to stand by them when those kinds of times come. What I think we want for our children is for them to feel that their world is enough of a safe, life-giving place for them, that they will want to devote at least some of their time and their energies to making it a safe and life-giving place for even more of the peoples of this earth. Another part of the language, that charge, states that she will learn that tragedy is a part of life, but may she also be made aware of life's glorious possibilities. Well, that line speaks to yet another of those many, many balancing acts that are involved in parenthood or being responsible for a child in any way. Many of those balancing acts that are involved in planting the garden and pulling back the bow. We live in a world that we want and need to both expose our children to and protect them from. Tragedy is a part of life. We all learn that very early on in the life cycle and as we go through it. From the death of a pet, remember when our son lost his first little hamster guinea pig there, on to the loss of a family member, clear on up to some of the more overwhelming cruelties that human beings can inflict upon one another. We can't completely shield our children's eyes from these things, nor in the end, over time, should we? We can, as best we can, nurture their hearts and the minds so they can both see those kinds of tragedies, but see well and far beyond what this charge also calls life's glorious possibilities. Possibilities that are every bit as is real. Every bit is capable of being fulfilled and living out as anything that life's shadow side has to offer. This charge also calls upon parents, and again, all who have a hand in a child's upbringing, to foster an awareness, as it puts it, of the power of love to transform both individuals and societies, if that love has courage as well as affection. As I thought about that line, and how to approach it, and what I might say about it, the bigger thought or question that came to my mind as I reflected on those words was, how do we teach our children the meaning of success? What do we want success to mean to them? Now, I've never shied away from wanting and motivating as best I can our son to be successful in the more worldly sense of the word. Find yourself a good career, secure income, circle of friends, create for yourself plenty of enjoyable and uplifting moments. And take good care of your parents when the time comes for that as well. You know, what parents don't want such things for their children as they come to adulthood? And as good and necessary as such things are, I say things that I have, and I know a number of you have tried to teach your children as well. I think we do our children a disservice, though, if we give them only a limited understanding of what success is and can mean. For a successful life is one that also reaches beyond itself. It's one that learns about and acts upon, in the language of this charge, the power of love to transform both individuals and societies, if that love has courage as well as affection. This is the kind of love we must be teaching our children about, even as we urge and counsel them to pursue a successful life for themselves. Finally, as I said, keeping it a little shorter today, we try to raise our children with some sense of the sacred. At the risk of rushing the holiday season even more than it's already been done, I would hold up my favorite Christmas meditation by the outstanding UU religious educator, late Sophia Foss. Her words are very well known to many of us. Each night, a child is born is a holy night. Well, now, I've never, as you can probably tell, had the experience of giving birth. So I'm not sure just exactly how much holiness is felt right at that particular moment. But Ms. Foss' words are well worth taking to heart, nonetheless. There is, I believe, as I've said on many other times, a certain kind of sacredness or holiness within all of us. And it is that spark of the divine that Ralph Waldo Emerson called it that also connects us to a certain kind of sacredness that's embedded out there in creation itself. This was a point Reverend Mary Westfall made when she was here with us last Thursday night for part of our Green Sanctuary program. It feels quite relevant to what I'm trying to say here. She pointed out, as I will say here, is when we can feel and affirm that sacred part of ourselves, and then link that to the sacred dimension within the larger life we're all a part of. When we can make that connection, we do then take a more careful, as in full of caring, a more careful stance and attitude towards this very fragile world and earth upon which we're given just a certain amount of time to live. To a large degree, this inherent sacredness is something we each have to discover and experience for ourselves. It can't really be given or done vicariously. And so the best we can do for our children is to provide a setting, an environment, a garden, if you will, where they can make that discovery for themselves. This is what I hope we can do both in our family homes and in the nurturing and challenging home we strive to provide and have in this congregation. It's a setting we will try to offer for as long as we have our hand on the arrow. Well, as I began to get my head around this homily today, I realized I wanted to use a different different closing hymn than the one I'd originally chosen. I even thought he had to tip Jed off to it, as a matter of fact. So in the hope that the principle of the free pulpit exchange extends to a changing hymn, and going back to the metaphor I opened up with, I'd like us to bring these thoughts to a close now by singing together hymn number 207, Earth is Given as a Garden.